Good afternoon, everybody. You're tuned to 103.2 Dublin City FM, and this is Europe Today with your presenters for this week, Eleanor Politi and myself, John Bourne. Coming up on today's programme, Eleonora will be talking to Rafael Attesta, a young Italian champion of a game entitled Bruciali. We'll have a recent statement from UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon urging the EU to do more about the Mediterranean migrant crisis. We'll have a roundup of some of the stories of Irish interest that are making the headlines around Europe, and we'll have some great music for your enjoyment as well. So stay tuned to us here on 103.2 Dublin City FM for the next half an hour and your programme Europe Today. Irish people taking a holiday elsewhere in the EU this summer are being reminded that water quality at 83% of bathing sites across Europe is classed as excellent. According to a new report from the European Commission, the top bathing sites in Europe, including lakes, rivers and beaches, are in Cyprus, Luxembourg and Malta. Kyriousis of the EU office in Dublin says the survey found that bathing water quality was low in some of Europe's bigger countries.
Well, the annual bathing water quality report tells us that the best quality bathing water is to be found in Cyprus, Malta and Luxembourg, and that includes coastal and inland, so lakes and rivers. And the highest number of bathing sites with poor quality water in the EU are found in Italy, France and Spain.
The European Consumer Centre is warning people that they have no legal protection if they purchase a vehicle in a private transaction. This is due to the fact that a private seller is not registered as a business or a sole trader. The centre says more and more people are purchasing cars but find they have no legal comeback if something goes wrong. Grace Duffy of the European Consumer Centre office in Dublin says it's always best to get a description spec in writing before purchasing a car in a private deal.
We would encourage people to try and get any representations from the seller in writing beforehand, simply because if there's any problems afterwards or if there's a dispute over some aspect of the car, it's very difficult to prove any verbal representations that have been made. So if you have any kind of documentary evidence to back yourself up, then that's obviously very helpful in terms of taking your case further.
More and more Irish women are leaving it later in life to give birth to their first child. New figures from Eurostat show that 52.7% of Irish women are now giving birth to baby number one in their 30s. The statistics show that teenage pregnancies in Ireland at 4.7% are below the EU average of 5.4%. Ciara Eustace of the EU office in Dublin says Irish birth rates are slightly out of kilter with the rest of Europe.
These figures tell us that the majority of women in the EU give birth to their first child in their 20s, whereas in Ireland, over 50% of women are giving birth to their first child in their 30s. Also, we're above the EU average for first-time mothers in their 40s. And we're also standing out as a large family country. We have one of the highest proportions of women having their fourth or subsequent children.
The European Commission says the government here should use any additional financial windfalls to bring down debt rather than invest in policy. It's one of four recommendations made by the Commission for Ireland as part of improving our financial outlook for the years ahead. Ruth Dicey of the EU office in Dublin says the Commission is also recommending changes to deal with expensive patented medicines.
Well, they've given quite specific recommendations in particular areas, and one is the healthcare system, where they mention reducing spending on patented medicines, among other things. They also talk about the access to affordable full-time childcare in getting people back to work. And finally, they look at the restructuring of mortgages in arrears, and they want to see a central credit registry.
The European Parliament recently reiterated calls for paid paternity leave across all EU countries. The MEPs are demanding that new fathers be entitled to at least 10 working days paternity leave in addition to any paid maternity leave for new mums. The Fine Gael MEP Deirdre Clune says it's essential that new dads get paid paternity leave.
We want to send out a message. It's a good thing to have children, to have babies, because society needs it. We need somebody when we're older ourselves to pay our pensions and to pay taxes. So we should be encouraging families or young people to have children. At the moment, the demographics show that Europe is getting older. Ireland is probably on the better side of that. It's at this point that governments need to be looking to the future and saying, how can we support parents in the very early stages of their babies' lives?
The Fine Gael MEP, Brian Hayes, says he thinks it's a good thing that people in Britain will have the right to vote on the promised referendum on EU membership. The Dublin MEP says the referendum will be a good thing for democracy. He also believes that Ireland can play a significant role in helping to handle Britain's forthcoming negotiations with the EU in the run-up to the referendum.
I'm 44 years of age, and a mate of mine who lives in London said to me recently he'd like to vote for this thing. He's never had a chance of voting for it. The last vote was in 1975 with Harold Wilson. He was 5 years of age at the time. So there's a whole generation of people in the UK who are actually pro-European but have never formally voted for any of the changes that we made by way of treaties at Amsterdam, at Maastricht, or indeed at Lisbon. So that's not their political tradition. But I think there's a groundswell of opinion in Britain that wants to settle the European issue once and for all. And the only way, of course, one can do that is by way of a popular referendum. So I think there is support for that.
The European Parliament voted recently for a number of measures to tackle the growing resistance to both human and veterinary antibiotics. There's growing concern that people are dying of infections because the antibiotics they're receiving aren't able to fight the infections anymore. The independent MEP Marion Harkin says the overprescription of antibiotics is a serious issue that needs to be urgently addressed.
We are becoming more and more resistant to antibiotics. So that means that what we now look on as fairly, you know, standard procedures like maybe a hip replacement or, of course, cancer therapies, etc., that they would become next nigh to impossible because of the huge risks of infection. Now, we're not at that point yet, but we're getting there.
Swedish singer-songwriter Måns Zelmerlöw was the winner of this year's Eurovision Song Contest, which was held recently in Austria. His song Heroes has received mixed reviews. Here it is for the one and only time on Europe Today. You can make up your own minds.
Don't tell the gods I left a mess. I can't undo what has been done. Let's run for cover. What if I'm the only hero left? You better fire off your gun once and forever. He said, go dry your eyes and live your life like there is no tomorrow's sun. And tell the others to go singing like a hummingbird, the greatest anthem ever heard. We are the heroes of our time. But we're dancing with the demons in our minds. We are the heroes of our time. Heroes. Oh, oh, oh. But we're dancing with the demons in our minds. Heroes. Oh, oh, oh. We are the heroes of our time. Heroes. Oh, oh, oh. But we're dancing with the demons.
now sing together.
Follow Europe Today on Twitter.
This is Eleonora Ippoliti from Europe Today. We are going to talk with Raffaele Testa, a young Italian player of the Il Pallone col Bracciale. That is an old popular Italian sport from the Marche region. It resembles tennis and it is played with a sort of racket called Bracciale. Each team consists of three players, the striker, the mid player and the fullback. There is also an outsider known as Mandarino, who plays an important role in the game. He throws the ball to the striker, who must direct it to the opposite side of the field. The game has very ancient roots. It reached its popularity during the Renaissance. Hello Raffaele, why did you start this game?
Well, I started playing Bracciale by chance, because a neighbor of mine suggested it to me. I was curious about it, and fortunately I took him up on it and started playing the game. At the time, I was only a child, 11 years old, and now that I'm 27, I still play, but hopefully I'll continue doing it as long as I'm physically able to. Although it's a tough, difficult and exhausting game, it's exciting. I also like hearing the applause of the audience when I score. It's a really unique feeling.
Can you tell us, where is the Bracciale game played?
Well, this game is played in Trea, the village where I live. That's a small town with a population of around 10,000 in the Marche region, east of the center of Italy. It's played in other Italian cities as well, but unfortunately, there are not many left. It's an old game that isn't played much anymore. It has never been played in Ireland, but abroad, in other countries like France, Germany and England, it was quite widespread. In Italy, the peak of its success was between the 16th and 19th century. Consider that Bracciale players were out-and-out professionals, as they could make a living from it, earning high salaries. They'd be comparable to today's football players.
What are your objectives for the rest of the year?
I'm looking after my athletic side in the gym because in June we are going to start training in preparation of the summer tournament. At the local level, here in Trea, the final match amongst the four teams takes place each year on the first Sunday of August, and I hope my team is going to win the competition so that we can compete at the national level as well. As a matter of fact, the winning team plays for the national championship, together with a few other teams that still play this sport. Because of this, I'm looking forward to playing the final in September's Italian championship.
Excellent! We'd like to know if you listen to a particular song before match.
Well, actually, I like listening to music. I listen to a lot of music. Each time I have a particularly important or demanding match to psych me up, I listen to a specific song by Pooh, my favorite music group. It's The Eagle and the Falcon.
Okay, thank you, Raffaele. It's been a pleasure. We know that today it's your birthday, so we wish you a very happy birthday.
Grazie.
This is Eleonora Ippoliti from Europe Today. Thanks for listening. We'll play out that song, L'Aquila e il Falco. Vai, Pooh. Thank you.
cielo di Dio, dice lui non è il mio momento, lei risponde sì. Ormai sulla terra, perché non vuoi venire con me? Posso portarti via nel tempo, verso altri mondi che non sai. Strappa il mantello che mi cancella, io sono bella, la compagna per te. Lui dice donna, nelle tue ombre, nel tuo castello oro non c'è. Io ti conosco quasi da sempre, c'è sangue dentro di te. Non voglio entrare alla tua corte, nel tuo giardino degli eroi. Decideranno l'aquila e il falco, tu puoi falciarmi, ma non ti amerò mai. Sta volando l'aquila e il falco, via nel vento sempre più su. Vola in alto, vola più in alto, fianco a fianco sempre di più. L'aquila e il falco e nessun vento li separò. Come fratelli volano accanto e la prima stella brilla da un po'. La donna dice sorridendo, nessuno ha vinto tra di noi. Ma le promesse io le mantengo, prendi altro tempo, tanto sai che ti avrò. Lui dice donna, luna e serpente, non cresce erba dietro di me, ma sono il padre della mia gente, ho il cuore rosso, il sesso di un re. Non voglio perdermi in battaglia, né per veleno carestia, ma fra le braccia il vino di donna, l'ultima donna, e morire per lei. Vola in alto, vola più in alto, dalla steppa ai ghiacci del nord. Vola in alto, vola più in alto, presto o tardi ti rivedrò.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
European Union defence and foreign ministers have approved plans to establish an EU naval force to combat people smugglers operating from Libya. The EU's foreign policy chief, Federica Mogherini, said the aim of the operation was to disrupt the business model of smugglers and traffickers' networks in the Mediterranean. Here's an extract from her recent press conference opening remarks.
Less than 1 month ago, we met in Luxembourg with the foreign ministers and the interior ministers together, just a few hours after the last tragedy in the Mediterranean Sea. Today, we have had a long day of work with the defence and the foreign ministers together. It was the first time after I think, quite some years. I think the last one was in 2012, the joint meeting of defence and foreign ministers. And we had on the agenda, first of all, the preparation of the June European Council on CSDP, discussion with the NATO Secretary General, Jens Stoltenberg, on our cooperation and our common work on the new security strategy of the European Union. And after this short press conference, we will continue foreign ministers only on the Middle East peace process just before my trip to Jerusalem and Ramallah on Wednesday and Thursday. One point of our common agenda, defence and foreign ministers together, was the follow-up of the European Council, the extraordinary European Council we had on the 23rd of April. Asking for a quick, urgent action on a European level to face the tragedies at sea in the Mediterranean that represent both a humanitarian and a security challenge, first of all for Europe, but also for the region, for the Arab world, and also for the African countries. Heads of state and governments, less than 1 month ago, stated the need to act urgently and jointly as Europeans. The need to act is clearly on different levels, with the plurality of actions, with the plurality of elements. And we know very well, we discussed this with the ministers today again, that not one single action will be effective alone. All elements are important in connection with each other. And that's why we talk about a comprehensive approach where all different parts of our action are relevant. Saving lives at sea, and also at land, saving lives at sea. That's why we decided to reinforce Triton and Poseidon, working on the root causes in partnership in particular with our partners in the African Union and in the Arab world, in particular working on poverty and wars, crisis, and dismantling the criminal networks that are smuggling and trafficking people. All of this in a comprehensive way, with some internal actions and some external actions. The internal actions are obviously under the direct responsibility of, in the Council side, interior ministers, and the Commission side. The agenda on migration was adopted, as you know, last week, presented it. Commissioner Avramopoulos was sharing with us this presentation today, but the focus today was obviously foreign defence ministers, the external part of our work to implement the decisions taken at the European Council in April. And on external action, we have three different elements. One side, increased partnership with African Union, with Arab countries, countries of origin and transit. Just yesterday we were discussing this with Turkey, increasing levels of cooperation on managing flows of refugees and migrants. Second, the decision to increase our presence with the already existing CSDP missions and operations. UCAP Sahel Niger has been discussed, and it has been decided already to increase our presence there last week. And last element, among many others, heads of state and government asked me last month to prepare possible CSDP operation to dismantle the business model of smuggling organizations in accordance with international law. Now, today, less than 1 month later, we adopted the crisis management concept and the decision to establish the operation with headquarters in Rome and with Commander Rear Admiral Credentino.
UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon says the European Union must do more to help migrants and asylum seekers crossing the Mediterranean. That was the key message to come out of his meeting with EU officials yesterday. Ban Ki-moon's visit coincided with an announcement by the EU that member states will be asked to accept 40,000 asylum seekers. Here's an extract from the Secretary-General Ban Ki-moon's address to the European Union.
The emergence of violent extremism is a great, grave threat to international peace and security. All countries and organizations should join hands to forge a multifaceted response that respects international human rights and humanitarian law. I'll present the comprehensive plan of action how to counter violent extremism and terrorism to the General Assembly later this year. Ladies and gentlemen, the complex challenges on migration and refugee protection are also foremost in our minds. In the Mediterranean, many women, men and children are losing their lives while fleeing war or simply seeking a better future. Our response must be comprehensive, focusing on countries of destination, transit and origin. We need to crack down on smugglers while saving lives and upholding human rights and international law. The United Nations, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, and the International Organization of Migration are ready to work with European leaders to address both the emergencies and root causes, and to explore how the member states of the European Union can provide legal alternatives to such dangerous voyages, including resettlement, work and study visas, and enhanced family reunification. In that regard, I welcome the announcement by the European Commission a short while ago of a proposal for the relocation of 40,000 of asylum seekers as a step in the right direction. I highly commend the very compassionate leadership of President Juncker of the European Commission. I encourage EU member states to show compassion as they consider this important proposal to share their resettlement responsibilities. This can enable the European Union to address the dramatically increasing flows of people while setting an example for other regions of the world facing similar challenges. Again, I thank Mr. President Juncker for your leadership and strong support. You can count on me. Thank you very much.
Well, I'm afraid that's all we have time for, folks. I hope you've enjoyed the program. Again, a very, very special thank you to my co-host this week, Eleonora Politi. Don't forget to check out our support website platform, which is europetoday.ie. That'll have a link to some of the items that we mentioned, and it'll also have a podcast of today's program. Join us again here on 103.2 Dublin City FM at the same time next week on your program, Europe Today.